everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Empty Harvest when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 41% of what you create and produce. The government gets the other 60%. That means you get $20,000, the government gets $30,000. Now, isn't that just special? And if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year, and you're going to net 25%, and the government's going to net 75%. That means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you will net 8% more. That's about $4,000. Take-home pay, net, guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining, interesting information. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call direct and order yours today. The number to call, 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Empty Harvest, a book written by Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson. This Bernard Jensen is a doctor, naturopathic doctor. And in the book, he sets out to tell us what causes all disease. So if you've got headache or carpal tunnel syndrome, cancer, heart attack, stroke, or if you have allergies or something relatively simple, you know, just maybe I'm allergic to pollen and dust or something. There's a cause and effect relationship that goes with your symptoms and that malady we call disease. We like to hang a label on it and call it cancer, then copyright and trademark it so that we can go out and sell it and market cancer, just like we market and sell Coca-Cola or pizza, you know, from Pizza Hut. You know, I can make pizza, but I can't make Pizza Hut pizza. And I can make drinks, but I can't make Coca-Cola drink. You got to be licensed to do that. Well, you can go out here and cure a disease. You just can't go out and cure cancer or heart attack and stroke and Hansen's disease and multiple sclerosis and muscular dystrophy, because those diseases have already got somebody that's copyrighted them and they're out marketing those diseases. They sell them. And the reason that you have these diseases is because you went out and bought it. Just like I told you about the law enforcement growth industry. The reason we have more and more crime is because that's what we buy every year, more and more crime. And because we buy more and more crime, we get to spend more and more money fighting more and more crime. And the same thing is true now with disease. The reason that you have more and more disease is because you buy more and more disease. You buy more and more disease because of what we buy to support our bodies. You buy bad food, you get bad disease. Now, of course, when you go down to Safeway or Kroger's, you don't intend to buy bad food. You don't go into the produce section and say, here's the bad broccoli, and here's the good broccoli, here's the bad cauliflower, here's the good cauliflower. And, of course, they don't sell it based upon the nutrients that it contains. You don't see a bin over here that says 24% protein wheat and 7% protein wheat, so that you can choose the protein content you want in your wheat. Now, there was a time in America when wheat in Kansas measured 24%. Those are days that are long distant. That was back in 1880. Today, it measures 7 to 13%. And it's that way all over America with all the produce that we grow. And that's what causes your disease. All disease is caused now by two factors. It's either one, it's lacking. This food now is lacking in nutrients, vitamins and minerals, so you're starving to death. Or two, this produce, this food that you're eating, contains toxins such as DDT or malathion or some other of the 89,000 chemicals that we have in our society, in our environment. And you're either being poisoned to death or starved to death. So if you're fat and overweight, you're starving to death. That's what your problem is. Now, we would look at somebody that's overweight and say, why, that's crazy. This guy's not starving to death. He's eating too much. Well, it's true. He's eating too much, but he's eating too much because he's starving to death. He's not getting the nutrients that he needs that would make his stomach shut it off. And I pointed that out to you, I think, a time or two back. I said, if you want to test this, you know, just go get yourself a bunch of bananas. Wait until you get real hungry. And sit down and eat a banana. And you'll get hungry for bananas. You know, I had a banana on my breakfast cereal yesterday morning. Boy, it was really tasty. I might even do it again this morning. I might go up and have a bite of breakfast, and I might put a banana on it. But pretty soon, I'm going to get two or three or four bananas in me here this week, and then I'm going to shut it off and say, oh, God, I don't want another banana. So you get full of bananas. You get tired of bananas, say, or strawberries. You get tired of anything. And that's because there's so much potassium in a banana. When you eat it, it loads up your system with potassium. So, oh, my God, don't send me another one of those bananas. So that's why you don't overdose on clean, wholesome, nutritious food, but you do on junk food. Now, you could eat Hershey bars until hell freezes over, and you'd never get full. I've never known anybody that could fill up on Hershey bars. And they taste real good. And if there's anything, you know, if God made anything better than a Hershey bar, he kept it for himself. That's the way I always figured it. But that doesn't mean that the Hershey bar is going to give you the nutrients that you need to shut it off. Now, it's full of calories. And that's what the problem is with obesity. You know, we're full of calories. We're getting fatter and fatter. But we don't have enough nutrients to shut off. To tell us to shut it off, don't put any more calories down here, we're full, we got all the nutrition that we need. Now, in Leviticus chapter 25, going over to the Bible here, I'm gonna underline this series of programs here on empty harvest. I'm going to show you what causes this. You know, I'm gonna put the pieces of the puzzle together, and we'll draw the lines to the dots so that you can see why it is that you've got these diseases, why you've got these maladies. And what's more important, you know, how to eliminate them. Hell, if we had a disease and we couldn't cure it, we don't need to talk about it. If you can't solve the problem, why do we need to jawbone over it? But if there is a solution to it, if you could get over your allergies and hay fever, if you could get over your tunnel carpal syndrome or your asthma or your arthritis or cancer, whatever it is, well, now that's worth something talking about. Now, there's a thing here called the sabbatical year. It's mentioned in Leviticus 25, verses 1 through 7. Very short, plain law, not much to it. Listen to this. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses in Mount Sinai, and he said, you speak unto the children of Israel, and you say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Eternal. A Sabbath unto the Eternal. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Eternal. And you shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. That which grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, and neither gather the grapes of your vine undressed, because it's the year of rest unto the land. and the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you. For you and for your servants and for your maids and for your hired servants and for your strangers and that sojourn with you and for your cattle and for the beasts that are in the land shall all the increase thereof be meat. All right, 7 verses, all there is to it. It's mentioned 2 or 3 other places in the Scripture. The rest of this chapter 25 deals with the Jubilee year, which is a land Sabbath that occurs twice per century, once every 50 years. So there's actually 16 of these land Sabbaths in a century. So you take 100 years, you'd 16 years out of 100, 16% of the time, you don't grow anything on the land. And it refertilizes the land. It's fairly simple. Let's take an apple tree, and this apple tree is producing, I'll say, 10 bushels of apples. You know, and it's a pretty good tree, and you're very happy with it. So you go out and you get 10 bushels off of it in year number 1, and you sell those 10 bushels. In year number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you sell those apples. And then in year number 7, it grows 10 bushels, but you don't harvest it and you don't prune it, and the apples grow, and they fall on the ground, and they just rot there. Terrible waste of apples. And all these apples rot. And the root system, which is underneath this tree, which is a mirror image of what's on top. You take all those branches that are up on top, down under the ground is a root system. Holds the tree in place, and it gathers nutrients. Now, there's an acid called carbolic acid that this tree is giving off constantly. These roots, got little root hairs down there on these roots. And then the top 2 inches of the soil is where this tree gets all of its food. It gets its water, it gets its anchorage from roots that go down deep in the ground. But right on the very surface, which goes all the way around the tree out to where the limbs end, you know, it may be stretching out there 10, 20, 30 feet from the stem of the tree, are roots under there. And those roots are giving off carbolic acid. And the acid touches the mineral earth, you know, the rock, the sand, etc., and it leaches out the minerals in the rock. Things, you know, minerals like copper and iron and magnesium and potassium and all these little trace elements. And then it makes it available for the tree to take it up into the tree, put it into the apple, which gives you these vitamins and minerals that you need to make your body strong and healthy, so you're strong and healthy little boys and girls. Now, that's the way that game is played, and that's the way that system works. Very, very neatly designed program. And to keep the land fertile forever, once every 7 years you let the land rest, and it refertilizes itself. It's a wild new idea, you know, for all you people working for DuPont and OrthoGrow and Standard Oil and Exxon, but there's a natural methodology for refertilizing the land other than NKP or chemical fertilizers and DDT and malathion. Okay, now that's the way God designed it. Now, we don't do that. And I don't know of any society that has ever practiced these land Sabbaths, at least in modern times. Now, I imagine back in Moses' day, you know, for the first 300 years, I imagine people did that. I talked to a couple of Jewish fellows from New York one time, partners in a vineyard up there at a winery. And when they mentioned that they were Jewish farmers, which is about as rare as hen's teeth. Jews normally don't get into farming. The only Jewish people I ever heard of engaged in agriculture, at least here in this country. They're all lawyers and politicians and doctors and people that make real money, but anyway, these two guys got into farming for some reason. So I asked them, I said, well, do you practice the land Sabbaths and Jubilees? And they said, no, we don't. I said, have you ever thought about it? And they said, yeah, we did. In fact, we did the numbers on it, and we figured that if it really worked, we would probably save about $200,000 or $300,000 a year for 6 years, which would be about, you know, $1 million to $1.5 million in fertilizer costs if we could eliminate fertilization and grow according to the land Sabbaths and Jubilees. But we've never tested it. We never tested it because we weren't sure that it would work. So, you know, there's your answer. They didn't have any faith in the program, so. And they said they've been doing it for years and years with chemicals, and it turns out a pretty good product, and they're happy with it, and their customers are, and they make a lot of money, and so they're just happy supporting DuPont and OrthoGrow, and so they're just normal run-of-the-mill farmers. And so I can tell you that as a farmer, now in my old age, I've been practicing the land Sabbath and Jubilee. So there's one farm in America, one, that practices these land Sabbaths and Jubilees. There probably could be 10 or 15 more that I don't know about, but I just want to tell you there is one here in the United States. And it works like a shot. I just wanted to report to you that I've tested it, and it works very well. And we use the natural farming methods. You know, we use birds, you know, to catch and kill the insects. We don't have an insect problem. We don't have locusts and grasshopper problems and infestations and things like that. I would say because we practice this natural farming system. But now, I wanted to show you here, though, that most people don't do that. The food that you people are eating out there from Safeway and Kroger and Walmart, that stuff is grown with petrochemicals. They put anhydrous ammonia on the ground. They get it out of coal tar. You know, they pump it out of the ground in Saudi Arabia, and they bring it over here in super tankers and offload it and run it through oil refineries, and they take the gasoline out of it and motor oil and diesel. And then they come up with this waste, you know, and so they use this chemical waste, and they run it through the plant a second time, and they make this fertilizer. It's a waste product. It's very, really very popular and profitable now. And then we spread all over the land, see. And it just does wonders for the plants, this chemical fertilizer, my God. And you take the pesticides we put on in the monoculture that we have in this country, and you drive through South Dakota and Nebraska and Kansas, and you just take a look at all those neat crops that are growing out there with that chemical and how deep green they are. God, they're just really keen. Now, they look good, smell good, and they harvest real good with machinery, but when you go to eat them, you find that they're deficient in nutrients. And a guy by the name of Adolf Steinbrum, you know, he ran a little test one time. This guy is Adolf Steinbrum. And he put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients, usually added by Purina, you know, to their commercial feeds. And compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybridized corn tested in 10 Midwest states in the recent year, Steinbrum's open-pollinated corn contains 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. And the same result was also seen in the content of the calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. And if they'd test it, you know, for all of the trace elements, they'd probably find that all of the trace elements would test the same. Now, that's open pollinated. Now, when we use the term open pollinated versus hybridized seed, that's the seed type. There's another factor, though, that goes into the nutrition in the plant, and that says that is what's in the soil for the seed to get out of the soil. So open pollinated seeds are better for getting the nutrients out. But the upshot of it is that the seed cannot get out of the ground what isn't there. And the reason that you've got more nutrients in natural organic soil is because the healthier plant that has more organic material, you know, the rotted apples, you know, from the last land Sabbath, that organic material in the surface of the soil combines with that carbolic acid, which is leaching out the minerals out of the mineral soil and combining that into the fruit that's going that the tree is making and putting into the apples for you to eat. There's one more little kicker here. I'll throw this one in for you. When you bite into an apple and you find a half a worm in there, which is everybody's worst nightmare. You know, oh my God, I got a half a worm in the apple. Well, that worm in there, as disgusting as he may be, is there because he's your friend. And he's eating that apple, and he's very repugnant. And you throw that apple on the ground, and you cough and choke and you spit, and you hope that you can get that worm out. He's not going to kill you. Add a little protein to your carbohydrates there. But you want to get rid of that worm because it's just disgusting eating worms. And so you have this fear of worms in the apple. So when you see an apple, it's got a little hole in it, you say, oh, this apple's no good. It's got a hole in it. There's a worm in there. And that's right. That's right. That apple isn't fit to eat, and that's why that worm is eating it. Because that worm won't eat a good, nutritious apple. You know, one that's full of vitamins and minerals. Worms don't eat those. They eat the sick ones, just like ticks attack sick hosts. So if you're getting ticks on you, then you're sick. I remember one time I was sitting down in the valley. Down, we call them hollers here, you know. They're not hollows, they're hollers. Anyway, we're sitting down there on a stone fence, and there was my wife sitting over there, and I was sitting over here. Pretty soon this tick's crawling on my arm, and so I grabbed this tick off my arm, and I smashed him. And as we're sitting there talking and jawboning, I said, well, I was grabbing ticks off of me and killing them, you know. And my wife was just sitting there watching me grabbing these ticks and killing them. And they were swinging down off the trees, you know, and aimed right at me, just like they knew me. I was an old buddy. And pretty soon my wife said, God, you are sick. I said, why do you say that? She said, well, you know how many ticks you've taken off you? Well, I counted 36 ticks in the last 15 or 20 minutes that you've picked off of you. And I'm sitting right next to you. And I haven't had a single tick on me. And that's an indication that your body is sick, because ticks are parasites, and parasites are attracted to sick bodies, weak hosts. I said, how do you know that? She says, well, because I read it in a book once. And I said, you sit here. So I changed places with her, and she sat over there. And, you know, I thought I was sitting in a tick nest or something. And so we sat there another 15, 20 minutes, and I took off another 10 or 15 ticks off of me. And she sat there the whole time. She never took a single tick off of her. Isn't that just special? All right. Now, there's a little lesson to be learned here. Now, people, you know, from the Bronx and Brooklyn, they don't know that. They think milk comes out of a carton or out of a gallon jug. And the rest of us out here, you know, that are on the farm, you know, we're watching some of these biologic phenomena, and we start to ask questions like, well, gee, why is that? What makes it work that way? So you don't have ticks in Brooklyn, but we have ticks out here on the farm, and so we have to deal with those ticks. Now, of course, you don't have any food in Brooklyn, and it all has to be trucked in, and the guys that are producing that food for you aren't producing food that's filled with vitamins and minerals. The protein content of your wheat runs 7 to 13%. Mine runs 16 to 20. Not quite up to 24 yet, but I'm getting there. And that's because our land in this country has been worn out. And that's what Bernard Jensen wanted to warn us about, this land that's been worn out. And the produce that's coming off of the land over here is bad for you. So let's start up here in the preface, and he tells us a little story concerning Mother Earth. And he says, though I now consider myself fortunate to know this truth, I must admit that learning was to be the costliest lesson of my life. You see, when I was a young man, I thought that life was a bowl of cherries and the earth was a cherry orchard. So I believed that I could keep filling my bowl and the earth would continue to provide the cherries without my ever having to give anything back. So it was only after a near-fatal illness brought me to the brink of death that I began to understand the link between mankind and planet Earth. This terrifying experience was to become the catalyst for my life's work in the healing arts, which work today spans more than 55 years in 65 countries. When I was 20 years old, the doctors diagnosed my condition as a chronic inflammation of the lungs. and at the time there was no cure. By living on foods that were nutritionally empty, overworking my mind and body daily at a dairy and nightly at chiropractic college, I made the foolhardy mistake of robbing Mother Nature. And at the time of my illness, I had hit rock bottom. I had used up every gift that nature had given me and had given nothing back in return. So after I consulted a Seventh-day Adventist physician, I realized that there was a difference between a poor food regimen and a healthy one. And this old doctor declared that my disease was caused by nutritional deficiencies. He said I was starving myself with a diet of empty foods. In its place, he prescribed a diet full of healthy foods. No drugs, just healthy food. And I combined this with breathing exercise and exercises given by Thomas Gaines, who once worked for the New York Police Department, and my condition improved. I began to gain weight and put several inches of flesh back on my chest, and I found renewed energy. I was back on the road to health. Now, nutrition had helped save my life, and I began to study food. But I learned that you cannot really understand the value of food without first studying the soil, what it is, and how that soil contributes to life and health. So I learned about the value of specific foods from V.G. Rosin, a Norwegian homeopathic physician who had studied the findings of the European food chemists. And I learned about the value of soil from William A. Albrecht, Ph.D., professor of agriculture at the University of Missouri. Dr. Albrecht taught that unhealthy soil will yield unhealthy plants, and humans who subsist on unhealthy plants grown in unhealthy soil will themselves grow weak and become unhealthy. Albrecht taught that soil can be ruined by several processes, most of them involving man's interference, and that the crops grown on such land will not build healthy bodies. Though they may look like healthy crops and taste like healthy crops, they will be nutritionally deficient, Albrecht cautioned. And it's for this reason that consumers must not trust the appearance or the taste of produce as a guide to its nutritional content. Modern farming may be capable of producing very pretty crops, but nature alone can supply the nutrition within. And there are various ways in which soil becomes depleted of essential nutrients. Bad farming techniques can result in loss of topsoil through erosion. Growing the same crops on the same land year after year, a process called monoculture, will rob the soil of its nutrients. Misuse and overuse of chemical fertilizers and pesticides will kill not only bad, but good forms of life in the soil, leaving only lifeless dust behind. However, it is not necessary for soil to be wholly exhausted for it to impact upon your health in a very negative way. For instance, if the soil is rich in most minerals but lacks calcium, food crops grown on that soil will also lack calcium. Likewise, soil which is deficient in the micro mineral boron will yield plants that are equally deficient in that micro mineral boron, even if it is balanced in other ways. So when we view it individually, mineral deficiencies in these plants may not seem to be health threats. But as we will see in the pages that follow, the long-term deprivation of but a microscopic quantity of one essential nutrient in our diets will alter the precise and vital balance of our body's chemicals. Ultimately, this will result in symptoms that are the precursors to to chronic or fatal disease. Now, sadly, it appears that modern agriculture has outgrown its dependence upon nature. While farmers in centuries past were forced to let dead fields lie fallow until the combined efforts of wildlife and rotting plants returned their fertility, modern farming technology now allows us to ignore symptoms of soil exhaustion. And incredible, but true, today's high-tech farmers continue to douse dead land with antibiotic, toxic chemicals that force green plants to grow against the will of a sickened Mother Earth. The Earth's response in the face of this assault is fierce. We call it the empty harvest. So during my years of study, I have learned that the soil is alive and that it needs to be fed properly just like any other living entity. It needs periodic rest if it is to continue to produce a rich harvest of nutritious food crops. And like all of those that we love and care for, Mother Earth deserves to be well fed and given the proper attention and rest. It's then that the earth will repay us by bringing forth fruit that is health building. In the years that followed my conversion from a sickly junk food addict to healthy proponent of natural foods and organic farming, I became excited by the prospect of starting a sanitarium on a ranch where I could grow much of the food that my patients would eat. By combining what I had learned from Rosine and Albrecht, from Robert Rodale, the publisher of Organic Gardening Magazine and the owner of the Rodale Publishing Empire, I was ready to give organic farming a trial. The results? Great success. At my Hidden Valley Ranch in Escondido, California, I took land once used to grow alfalfa and graze cattle, and I converted it over a period of years to a rich and productive organic farm. The ranch consisted of a flat valley flanked by boulder-strewn hills on two sides, and I grew vegetables in the valley. Along one hillside were planted several varieties of grapes, while on the other side was planted a fruit orchard. In the orchard, we grew apricots, pears, plums, apples, peaches, nectarines, persimmons, figs, mulberries, kumquats, loquats, grapefruit, oranges, lemons, tangerines, and tangelos. In the rich organic soil of the valley, we grew lettuce, carrots, beets, squash, corn, tomatoes, onions, radishes, melons, peas, beans, turnips, okra, artichokes, and more, often 5 to 8 varieties of the same vegetable type. My fruit orchard became the dining room for birds from miles around, and eventually I enclosed the whole orchard with chicken wire so that we could have some of the fruit for ourselves. And although neighboring farms had as many fruit trees and berry bushes as we did, the birds left theirs alone and came to ours. Perhaps this was because we did not use any toxic insecticides, fertilizers, or manufactured chemicals. We had our own compost heaps, and we bought additional organic fertilizers as needed. Now, what the birds knew instinctively, the humans learned very slowly over time. One old gentleman came to visit the ranch often because he said it was the only place where he could get relief from persistent eye ulcers. Each time he returned home following a visit to the ranch, his eye ulcers would return. I knew that this was because once home he would resume eating fruits and vegetables with chemical spray residues from his local supermarket instead of the clean, organically grown produce that he ate while on the ranch. When I persuaded the gentleman to plant his own organic garden at home, his eye ulcers left and never returned. My experiences running the ranch the organic way taught me that Mother Earth will reward us bountifully if we only treat her gently. And like our human reproductive systems, that of the earth is delicate, and too much of a disturbance or imbalance can destroy its ability to bear fruit. Happily, there are others who understand this truth. My co-author, Mark Anderson, is one of them. And I met Mark at a recent Whole Health Institute conference in Estes Park, Colorado, to which we were both invited. The workshop that he gave, not only mirrored my own experience, but harmonized with it like a piano duet. So Mark told me how the immune system of the human race is inextricably linked to the immune system of our planet. And as long as the Earth and its topsoil and its varied environments are healthy, Mark observed, the human race will be healthy. But when the Earth ails, the human race will ail right along with it. An interesting part of Mark's workshop at the conference was his reflection on the way Native Americans have lived on this continent for several thousand years without disturbing its ecological balance or interfering with its ability to provide food, clothing, and other necessities for human survival. It was only after the Europeans and the settlers began to gorge themselves on the land's bounty without regard for replacing it, he reflected, that a downward spiral ensued. Now today, a little over two centuries since these settlers arrived on this continent, we have produced so much toxic chemical pollution of our country's air, water, and soil that there is real concern over our ability to even clean it up. In 1962, an unusual book entitled Silent Spring stirred a controversy here in the United States and alerted many people that toxic chemicals threaten life on planet Earth. The book, written by Rachel Carson, is dedicated to the great physician and philosopher Albert Schweitzer, who said that man has lost the capacity to foresee and then to forestall, and he will end by destroying the earth. The title, Silent Spring, is a word picture of a spring without birds or songs from the birds. Birds eat plants sprayed with chemicals intended to kill insects. The birds die, and the reader is left to question who will be next, and the implications are very clear. With Silent Spring, Carson's contribution was not the presentation of a doomsday sermon, but rather it was the careful and scientific documentation of damage done by human hands to our planet's air, soil, rivers, and oceans through the year 1960. Now, nearly three decades later, we can make comparisons to judge whether progress has indeed been made. We have to realize that men and women were unable to destroy the world before the 20th century simply because they did not have the technology with which to accomplish the deed. But the 20th century has been an era of chemicals and drugs and nuclear radiation. Even without another world war, it is now possible these days for the major world powers to destroy all life from off the planet by poisoning the earth, whether intentionally or accidentally. Mark Anderson and I have joined forces to write this book with the hope that it will guide our fellow inhabitants of this planet to a more harmonious and respectful relationship with our Mother Earth. It's to this end that my explanations of the relationship between soil and man lead to the text in Part 1, Mark's discussion about man, earth, and immunity, and how it comprises Part 2. And in our conclusion, I present various ways to help Mother Earth recover her health and fertility. All right, now that's the preface, and that'll set us on our course. All disease is caused by bad soil. Hey, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will necessarily reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Empty Harvest, and while we're at it, I guess I should tell you that this book came from Acres USA. So if you'll go to Acres USA, or I suppose you could probably get a copy of Empty Harvest by Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson from Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com or any other bookstore. Dr. Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson are the two authors. Let me flip over here to Man, Earth, and Immunity, 5 pages. See where it's at here. Soil and Civilization. Let's see, we want to get over here to about page 27. And let me give you a little introduction here, in which he talks about Man, Earth, and Immunity. Let's see if I can find it here. Should have the page number. Here we go, page 23. Where he has a neat picture over here of the eastern United States with a picture here that says, "Watching our forests die without understanding the consequences." It's called acid rain. Now, what's going on planet Earth is a real problem. We are destroying the Earth, not with nuclear waste from Chernobyl, but we are destroying the Earth with millions of pounds of chemicals and pesticides that we're putting on the top 6 inches of the soil. And in the process of doing that, there's a time bomb ticking. And in the next series of programs, I'm going to show you what the consequences of the time bomb is. There's a guy that's told us what the ultimate end will be for people who do not practice the land Sabbath. So we started off today's program with the land Sabbath in Leviticus 25, verses 1 through 7. I'm going to show you what the consequences are. So I started with the Food and Drug Administration versus the people. And I showed you that the FDA, combined with our administration and government, coupled with the multinational corporations, is a mafia organization designed to create and perpetuate a monopoly in food and drugs at your expense. That was the first series. Then I took Kevin Trudeau's book on natural cures, and I said, now, this same Food and Drug Administration is out here busily enforcing the monopoly by using SWAT team raids on anybody who threatens that drug and food monopoly. That was number two. Now we're up to empty harvest. Here's what's causing the problem. It's bad soil. And the ultimate result of that bad soil will be explained to us in the little book, 22 chapters, called Revelation, at the very end of the Bible. There's this little book, and it simply tells us the ultimate outcome of our own actions. Four programs, or four series of programs here, to explain to us the cause and effect relationship. So let's take a look at man, earth, and immunity. I brought a sample of what may be some of the most ideal soil on planet Earth to a lecture that I gave recently. The soil came from my minerally enriched organic garden in Fort Collins, Colorado. After a great deal of work, it is among the most balanced, trace mineral-rich soil that you can find anywhere. I asked the doctors attending the lecture to touch the soil and to hold it in their hands to experience direct contact with a high-quality soil, a soil exquisitely rich in minerals, biologically precious metals. So when they touched the soil, that touch symbolized the first lesson that we need to learn in strengthening our immune system. Our individual immune systems are inescapably linked to that soil on planet Earth, of whose substance we are made. From dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. This entire planet Earth, the complete geosphere, has its own functioning immune system. It is a self-protecting, regenerating, healing system. And when we're not integrated into that system, or if we harm that system, then the inevitable result is our own degeneration and ultimate demise. As the soil passed from hand to hand, we acknowledged that this is the most valuable commodity on planet Earth, from which comes all of the blessings that life bestows upon mankind. There is no blessing that anyone has ever received that was not linked to the earth, even if it came from the Sears catalog. And that we will explore together in this book is the interwoven fabric of the living immune system that encompasses all life within, on, and above the surface of planet Earth. Viewed as such, a picture of wholesome wholeness emerges, and we, as life's crowning creation, will see our remarkable role in rebuilding and preserving this global immune system. Now, the immune system is an internal alliance. The subject of the human immune system, partly because of the worldwide epidemic of acquired immune deficiency syndrome, commonly called AIDS, is receiving wide coverage in the press these days, stirring a popular movement of concern and interest. However, the importance of the immune system should be nothing new for any serious health professional. In the early days of learning about physiology and biochemistry, we realize that the immune system is not so much a system in the usual sense of body systems like the skeletal system, or the respiratory system, or the reproductive system, where you can analyze and quantify and qualify the specific organs that are involved in the process. For example, In the respiratory system, we talk primarily about the lungs or the bronchial passageways. However, what we have with the immune system, to the dismay of specialists who love to divide the body into its tiny specialized sections, is rather an alliance and a relationship, which is an integrated coalition of organs that works intersystem-wise to protect the body and to inform the body of what belongs to it and what does not. Like immigration or customs officials, our immune systems determine what is allowed into the body. Like they should be allowing who comes into the country and what must be deported. It has a remarkably sophisticated means of discerning all of this. This internal immune alliance includes the thymus gland, which is part of our endocrine system, the lymph nodes from the lymphatic system, the spleen, the bones, the nervous system, the hypothalamus, and the brain. The major commonality of this alliance we call, in its totality, the immune system. And it works like this, that all of the allies manufacture their immune substances out of nutrients. Now, these nutrients are called vitamins, amino acids, minerals, trace elements, and the essential fatty acids. So when we look at the global ecological travesty that we are in, that we are viewing worldwide, we see, too, that the immune system of mankind is ominously being jeopardized. So we tend to think of the jeopardy in terms of some very special areas, the popularized media items such as AIDS. After all, the World Health Organization forecasts that 75 million people are going to die from this immune system disease. But doesn't all life-threatening disease involve a collapse of the immune system? The National Cancer Institute predicts that one out of every three Americans will be afflicted with a form of cancer in their lifetime, as of 1987. 30% is the exact figure, one out of three, a collapse of the immune system. Though rare in the last century, cancer and heart disease are today's leading causes of death. Chronic degenerative diseases, such as diabetes, arthritis, and lupus, which also reveal the collapse of the immune system, appear to be virtually out of control. And yet, another, during the earlier part of this century, medical science gave us the highest hopes with the new wonder drugs called antibiotics. It seemed that we finally had infectious disease under control. However, this was, as has been demonstrated, a false hope. It was a false god who, during this last part of the 20th century, has now failed us, while driving more rational, natural approaches to health and disease into the scientific underground. In order to discuss the human immune system, let's look at the larger immune system of planet Earth, for the two are like Siamese twins connected at birth. As a culture, we're not just unnatural, it is deeper. We are anti-natural. And one of the reasons that I sense such a kindred spirit with the native North American people is not only the romantic image that I have of a beautiful people and how they lived, but more so because of the very scientific evaluation. Here was a people who inhabited this continent for thousands of years before the white man came, a people who had very actively lived on this land, used it for everything that they needed and wanted. And when the European settlers began arriving in the 16th century, it was still in pristine condition after thousands of years of their use. In the modern vernacular, this land was in showroom condition. After thousands of years of use, would you rather buy a piece of land from an American Indian or from an agribusiness farmer? The water was absolutely pure. You could stop anywhere and drink it, as long as it was flowing. The land, no matter where you went, was fertile. If a seed fell out of your pocket, a plant would grow. The trees and the forests were everywhere. An Iroquois chief told me that in his lore and legends of the Iroquois nation, they speak of how a squirrel could run from the Atlantic Ocean to the Mississippi River that they called the Father of the Great Waters, the Mississippi, and never touched the ground once, leaping tree branch to tree branch. And the Iroquois gave directions by noting grandfather trees as landmarks. Here was a people so in tune with the earth, its immune system, and their own were so integrated that when the white man arrived here, he found an unspoiled, perfectly integrated whole ecosystem where mineral, microbial, vegetable, insect, atmospheric, animal, and human kingdoms coexisted in perfect balance. But in a matter of a few hundred years, through wholesale exploitation and plain stupidity, the land today lies decimated. Clear-cutting of forests and depletion of the soil began immediately by the settlers. To date, about 260 million acres of American forests have been cleared for meat production. The vast majority of grain we grow is for livestock feed. A poisoning campaign begun in the 1800s and progressive depletion and demineralization of the soil have put North America within 7 or 8 inches of barren desert. Americans are not the only offenders, however. What we have done to the soil and the disregard that we have shown for it is a travesty. We have watched it become wasted, poisoned, sterilized, and eroded, thus weakening our own immune systems to the most dangerous level, which is why we need to begin right away to reverse the damage caused during this last century. And although the popular ecology movement grabs an occasional headline, what our political leaders, scientists, and doctors are unwilling to come to grips with is that we're on the threshold of vast human annihilation on a scale of biblical proportions. The effort to revitalize the human immune system must begin with a massive effort to return vitality and fertility to our soils. Now, that's a wild concept for most of you people living in the cities, no doubt. But I think I can demonstrate that with the use of the book called Empty Harvest. You ought to get a copy. It's about $14.50. That's what I paid for this one. Price tag is still on the book. It's marked $13.95, but they bumped it up to $14.50. I imagine they needed a few pennies more. Called Empty Harvest, Dr. Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson. We'll take it up right there next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, we're out of time. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.